This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
His shooting percentage is down. He doesn't look good on the court. We all know the crap that happened over the summer. He's disgruntled. They traded his brother. They were trying to replace him with LaMarcus Aldridge. We get it.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
They've got Batum, Lamb, Jeremy Lin, Spencer Hawes. They're up to about 35% as a team, which is actually 13th in the NBA. And Nicholas Batum is playing like an all-star right now.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So last week, we started the show with something not as light as we usually do, and that's the ongoing water crisis in Flint, which is an absolute travesty. But as we get to this week's episode, there is a little bit of good news, I guess.
Well, it looks like Justin out there fighting the good fight has made some progress.
He's been out there for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
That's some real dedication. I'm a little proud of Justin right now.
And we should also be a little bit proud of Detroit Pistons owner Tom Gores. He announced plans that he's going to raise $10 million to help those impacted by the water crisis in Flint. It looks like the Pistons owner is from Flint.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you got to get back to the hometown. I mean, it's good. It's good that there's been a number of people, you know, recently this week that in positions of power that have been donating water. And it's going to take a long time to fix this, I guess, is my point. And I hope
I don't know that you can ever really fix it. I mean, the damage has been done as far as like the brain damage and the impact
right,
to the
But I
the
hope
residents.
That for the future water crisis, I guess what I'm saying, in the sake of their drinking water, like I hope they really actually fix it. And this isn't let's send them clean bottled water and okay, we'll forget about this in 3 months. That tends to happen with causes on social media in today's world.
Well, somebody said this, and it really resonated with me. But she said that if you're a resident of Flint, who do you trust when they tell you the water's safe enough to drink?
The outside panel with that doctor from Virginia Tech. That's the only one I trust because he's the one who blew the cover on it. So if he blew the cover on it, I trust him enough to be like, okay. And the underrated thing is, I'm pretty sure there's a law in the United States, maybe I'm a little wrong about this, but if you have, I don't think you can sell your property if it has no lead contamination. The entire city has no lead contamination. You have 120,000 or so people who now can't even sell their property and get out of the hellhole after their water's been poisoned.
Maybe there's a law that says you can't, but who could, even if there wasn't that law? Like, who in their right mind would buy a piece of property in Flint now?
Again, no offense to Flint, but I don't think there were many people going there before the water crisis happened.
Right.
And now there's really going to be no one going there. I mean, honestly, like, with the reputation, they might as well knock the city down and start over. That's not obviously not realistic, and it's not as easy because there's too many people livelihood at stake. But, I mean, seriously, like, this is what people are going to think of now when they think of Flint.
It's like the suburbs of Detroit. You know, you can buy houses in Detroit for like 10 bucks.
Yeah. You know, I haven't been there, but from articles I was reading the other day, is downtown Detroit has actually become somewhat of like a hipster haven because no one wants to go there. So all the hipsters move in because no one wants to go there.
And so they make it
their own little area. Tim, there you go, man. That's your call.
It's like
Detroit is calling your name.
Well, it's like Seattle, man. Seattle, the reason why Seattle popped off and made it the hipster haven that it is now is, you know, there was so much heroin and there were so many drugs, and eventually that culminated into really good restaurants and art.
Yeah.
Heroin
addicts good cooks? Is that what you're implying?
Well, eventually you have a whole bunch of hippies and druggies and all that, and it culminates into some sort of art. Yeah, eventually. And so that's what happened with Seattle. So I guess with Detroit, they could hope that happens, and then they get their own Modest Mouse and Nirvana.
It is so cold in the D, as the kids say. Justin's out. He's a regular freedom fighter, so gotta give it up to him today. Unfortunately, there's only gonna be two of us today here on the show. This is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
Justin Kuzart, as we said, he is out for the second week straight. He's up protesting in Flint, but don't worry, our freedom fighter hero will be returning to us next week. So stay tuned for that.
A little bit of closet cleaning I wanted to do, or maybe that's not the right term, but whatever. It's early in the morning.
House cleaning?
House cleaning. There you go. Is that we've been working for 2 years on this podcast to eventually one day be able to have all the hard work culminate into some sort of at least breaking even on the money we put into the show. And it looks like that's going to be happening. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and, you know, it's like with YouTube videos where YouTube videos used to not have ads, but now that they do. But I've been listening to other podcasts where they'll put in 6 or 7 ads into their podcasts. And I just want to make a point of saying that while we will probably soon have some sponsors for our show, that we will never put in more than one at the beginning, one at the end, and one in the middle. But we're going to limit it to that.
Oh, man, you're teasing the people. Let's just say, in the words of the immortal DJ Khaled, we're up to something.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to mention it. And I was listening to another podcast this morning, one that I'm a mild fan of. And they quite literally had an ad after every single segment. And the ads they've been putting in their show have been growing. And I honestly, like, I turned it off. Because I was disgusted by it.
Well, it's all about balance. Like, there's ways to do ads that aren't distracting.
Like how Josh Lloyd does it with his, I totally respect that. And I even respected the way that they were putting in ads prior to this. But once it gets to the point where every single different show segment, you're doing a live read or there's a recorded spot, like, it's just gross. Anyway, we are going to eventually have ads. That's coming sooner than later, but we'll never do that to our listeners.
Yeah, we're up to something. Like we said, when Justin's gets back, you know, we have a pretty exciting announcement for you guys. In the meantime, it's the time of the show where we read an iTunes review. And last week, we read a great Facebook review from our friend Lucas in Poland.
Thanks again, Lucas. He said he liked your voice.
Anyways, Tim accuses me here of being biased with picking that review. He thinks the only reason I picked that review is because it said nice things about me. And one thing we say on the podcast is we're always about keeping it honest. So Tim, without further ado, I have a review for you. Mm. This is an iTunes review. It's from America. It is a 5-star review. And the name of the review is Tim Tompkins Nimples. It's by Bert Loves Tim. For you, man. This is specifically picked for you.
I'm excited. I don't read the reviews until you read them on the show.
Well, here we go. All right. So this review says, from Bert Loves Tim, it says, greatest podcast of all time. Tim Tompkins is clearly more knowledgeable than Kevin about all things balls. I just wish he would show his nipples more on the Periscope. That's really my favorite thing.
All things balls?
Yeah, all things balls.
Because we used to Periscope a bit more than we do now, but someone was watching the Periscope and wanted to see my nipples. I don't know why.
Well, it's Bert, clearly.
Yeah. Well, that's a thank you, Bert. I appreciate you thinking that I'm more knowledgeable on balls than Kevin.
Why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Stephen A. Smith of ESPN talked about the possibility of Kevin Durant signing with the Los Angeles Lakers. Apparently, this is only because the Lakers believe when Westbrook becomes a free agent in 2017, that's where he will go. Festus Ezeli missed his second straight game on Saturday because of a sore left knee. Ezeli tweaked his knee during the game against San Antonio. He had an MRI exam on Tuesday. The results were inconclusive. Ezeli is averaging 7.5 points per game, 5.9 rebounds, and 1.2 block shots in 17.8 minutes this season. He actually missed the 2013-2014 season after surgery on his right knee. Paul Millsap suffered a left ankle sprain with 2 minutes and 50 seconds remaining in the second quarter of Thursday's game against Miami. He did not return, but the x-rays were negative, and he is listed as probable for the next few games. Millsap was also voted into the All-Star game this week. Marco Bellinelli has been apparently up on the trading blocks for the Kings. He signed a 3-year, $19 million deal with them in July. Nikola Mirotic is out at least 3 weeks with an appendectomy. He was also named to the Rising Star Challenge on Wednesday. An area of concern, Anthony Davis has suffered his second concussion in 3 years. Since his rookie season in 2012-2013, Davis has missed 52 games due to injury. Spurs coach Becky Hammon has become the first female named to an NBA All-Star coaching staff. And Adrian Wojnarowski dropped another bomb on the NBA world. Following a 2-19 stretch, stretch and a 14-35 season record, the Phoenix Suns have fired their head coach, Jeff Hornacek, after their loss on Sunday night. Since December 20th, the Suns are league worst, 2-19. They have the worst offense and defense and have a negative 13.3 point differential. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
I have a lot of mixed feelings about All-Star Weekend.
Dude, you love the All-Star Weekend. What are you talking about? It's your favorite basketball weekend of the year.
It should be. It should be. I really feel like All-Star Weekend is a culmination of the season. It's a celebration of the NBA and what we love so much in our sport.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been disgusted with the fan voting. Apparently, DeMarcus Cousins is too. But the reserves came out, and the reserves, there's no Zaza Pachulia, unfortunately, who did finish ahead of Draymond Green in fan voting. But I feel like they got the reserves pretty right, you know, for the most part. Some players took some had some grievances with not being voted on, and every year there's going to be a few snubs.
Yeah, it happens every year.
You can't get everybody on.
It can't be perfect. It's an all-star team. There's 12 spots.
So the Western, I guess we'll start over in the West since we started in the East last week. Draymond Green, Chris Paul, DeMarcus Cousins, Klay Thompson, James Harden over in the West, as well as LaMarcus Aldridge and Anthony Davis. One thing of note, though, that's really interesting is Anthony Davis's $20 million contract bonus was either qualified by MVP, which he's not going to get this year, a fan vote into the All-Star, or making an All-NBA team.
Not to get distracted from the point, because that is awesome for Anthony Davis. And,
well, it's not awesome. He didn't get in. He has to make an All-NBA team now. And there's very few times that a player makes an All-NBA team.
Oh, he had to be a starter?
Yeah, he had to be a starter.
Oh,
yeah,
oh,
so
oh.
Like going forward this season, Anthony Davis is essentially playing for $20 million.
I think there's I think off name recognition, though, he's got a pretty good chance at All-NBA.
Yeah, there's a chance. It's every year there's between 0 and 2 tops players that make it into All-NBA who aren't on who aren't on playoff teams. So, it's a storyline to watch going forward.
Absolutely. And, not to get distracted, but because you mentioned MVP, there's no way that, MVP is borderline unanimous this year, right? I mean, we had a very spirited discussion last year between Steph Curry and James Harden, but I don't know how it can't be Steph Curry this year.
Well,
I don't know how you'd vote for anyone other than Steph Curry this year.
I was looking at the MVP race, and it said, obviously, Curry's in 1, Kawhi Leonard in 2, and Kevin Durant in 3. Any other year, I think you could make a case for either of those other guys. I mean, the Spurs is interesting, though. They're now, almost a point ahead as far as point differential goes? Number 2 team in the NBA?
Sure, but you're going to have, on the other side of the coin, they just got smacked by Golden State.
Yeah, I don't take much out of that game.
I don't either, because I think Pop's kind of, I think it's a Popovich, almost scouting and feeling them out. But
well, did you see the lineups they were running in the second half? It was like Jonathan Simmons through the entire third quarter and was running out really weird line. Like there's not much you can take from that. The Spurs turned it over like 5 or 6 times in the first quarter. They couldn't hold on to the ball. You know, it was an un-Spurs-like game with very Popovich-like lineups in a game where he didn't want to show his cards. So I just I don't take much out of that. So if you want to look at the one game that the Warriors won over that as far as the MVP race and whether or not that sways it, fine. I don't agree.
Oh, well, Curry to me, that to me doesn't have anything to do with the MVP race. I just I don't think anyone can. I mean, Curry's fourth quarter numbers are ridiculous. You know, we've seen the Warriors play a handful of games without Curry, and while they've won a few, it's clearly Steph Curry this year. To me, there's not even that. The people right below him to me are people that are in the votes. Kawhi Leonard is in the mix. I think KD is in the mix. I think that Russell Westbrook should be in the mix, but they're all trailing Curry. But anyway, back to the topic. So All-Star reserves. I'm pretty satisfied across the board. There's nobody the big standout that everybody's going to say is Damian Lillard on the West. And Lillard right now is top 10 in both points per game and assists per game. And it's the first time since 1991, I believe, that somebody was in the top 10 in both those categories and didn't make the All-Star game. So I think there's definitely of note there. but I don't really know who I would take off this roster to put Lillard on.
Yeah, I mean, Lillard, Hayward, and Dirk were the three notable ones.
What's the other one, too? This is the first All-Star game without Duncan and Dirk since, like, 97, yeah, or one
like
of 20
them. 20 years or something.
That's 15 crazy.
Years. I saw that. Lillard, I mean, you know, you could definitely make a case for Lillard over Thompson. You could definitely make a case for Lillard over Harden, especially with the Portland Trailblazers being, you know, in the playoff hunt, which is crazy considering the lack of talent on the Portland Trailblazers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a Portland Trailblazers team that the Sixers beat by 25 points at one point this year. I mean, you take Lillard off that team and it's an absolute dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of value, I think there's definitely a point to be said there. I know Trent Arnold was arguing for him on our Facebook page. I mean, it is a bit of a surprise, but it's not egregious to me, I guess I should say.
Not egregious. I guess this is the second year in a row where he's felt like he was snubbed, though.
And then how about the Eastern Conference? What are we looking at over there?
East, we got Paul Millsap, Chris Bosh, which I'm really happy Chris Bosh made it, Jimmy Butler, John Wall, Isaiah Thomas, Andre Drummond, and DeMar DeRozan, all really deserving names. If you're looking at the East, the notable snubs being Reggie Jackson, Kemba Walker, Pau Gasol, Vucevic, Al Horford, Kevin Love. Kevin Love had those comments saying he's never seen a number one team before who only got one All-Star in.
Yeah, but I hate that logic. You know, it was the argument that we had with Atlanta and Golden State last year where they were both pacing ahead, so far ahead of everyone at the All-Star break. It's like, you know, you can argue for some of these guys, but I mean, look at who would realistically be an All-Star in the Cavaliers. LeBron James is. Kyrie Irving hasn't played all year. And Kevin Love, for better or for worse, like, his numbers haven't been that eye-popping. You know, we talk about Kevin Love and how we don't think necessarily the Cavaliers use him right. And I'm not doubting Kevin Love's talent. I mean, there are people on this list that you can definitely argue that he is more talented than. But we're talking about the first half of the season. Was Kevin Love one of the 12 best players in the first half of the season in the Eastern Conference? I'm not sure he was.
No, but he's also playing a role that he's being asked to play. And so do you penalize the player for fitting the role that they're asked to do?
No, you shouldn't, but it's going to be looked. You know, it's the same thing that we say about Chris Bosh when he's in Miami and LeBron was down there. It's, you know, he'll always be underrated and not truly, you know, showing his talents the way he's capable of. You know, for better or for worse, coaches are going to see that and they may be a little under the radar. And I think that could very well be a case of what happened here.
Yeah, I think as far as it seems like a lot of people are either really ecstatic that Isaiah Thomas made it or they're upset that Isaiah Thomas. Josh on our Facebook page, he said that Thomas is not an All-Star. Just because Boston is a decent team doesn't mean that they deserve an All-Star. I couldn't disagree more with him. I mean, you look at Boston, they're in the fifth seed right now. They're sitting at 27-21. They've won 56% of their games. He's averaging 21 points and 6 assists. As far as point guards go, he's been one of the top point guards in the East and, you know, arguably a top 10 guard in the NBA right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay with it, too. I really love it in just particular, and this has nothing to do with his actual numbers this year, but Isaiah Thomas was the last pick in the draft.
I think he's lowest pick to ever make an All-Star game. I could be wrong about
that. But no, I think he broke the one before this, I believe, and I don't think I'm 100% right here, but I believe it was 57. And so IC was 60. So, I mean, you literally can't get lower than he was picked in the draft. And now he's an All-Star. It's just, you know, awesome stuff for Isaiah Thomas.
So are you, and then, of course, I guess the elephant in the room and something that we left off of the show outline, but Tyronn Lue and Greg Popovich. Tyronn Lue coming in, having coached, you know, I guess by the time it happened, 6 games or something, 7 games maybe, and coaching the All-Star game. You brought this up, Kevin, that it's a tradition that the team's coach who won last year gets to coach. Do you think that they should have made an exception and put in a different coach? I mean, you have Toronto right now who's sitting back, you know, 2 games back. Did Dwayne Casey deserve that nod?
Oh, I mean, I think Dwayne Casey probably deserves it more. I think it's one of those things that we talked last week that the Blatt firing is so unprecedented in the sense that you don't really see teams that are in first place by such a wide margin fire their coach in the middle of the season. And I don't think the NBA even thought about it when it happened. It's just one of those things that kind of slips under the cracks. And now you're like, oh, they're leading at halfway. Oh, I guess we should make them the coach now. But I mean, yeah, it's just sticking to tradition, I guess, more than anything. But I think there probably should be made an exception here. I also don't think coaching the All-Star game, I mean, do you really do a lot of coaching? It's more of a nod than anything, and I can get the somebody may feel snubbed about it.
So the Rising Stars Challenge. The NBA last year announced they were going to do a change to the Rising Star Challenge, and this is what I found much more interesting than the All-Star Reserves, because I think more or less the NBA got the All-Star Reserves right. The assistant coaches that voted on it, should Lillard have been in? Probably. You know, you can make a case for Love and Al Horford and Vucevic and yada yada, but for the most part, like, everybody in deserves to be in. The NBA, though, announced that they were going to do a format change. Instead of in prior years it being rookies versus sophomores, they were going to do World versus USA.
Right.
And so this year, with it being World versus USA, right now the NBA's got 101 international players in the league. Honestly, there are players that are in for the World that are getting a nod over much-deserved USA talent.
Oh, absolutely. But it's part of the NBA. You know, we talk about this all the time, is that the NBA has really done a good job, probably more than any other professional American sport, of really appealing to demographics all across the world. I mean, the NBA is an international game at this point. It's everywhere, you know, and there are competitive basketball leagues in other countries. It's not like the USA is just constantly. I mean, the USA obviously constantly cranks out the best basketball talent. I've said this on the show before. There's no reason in a basketball competition that the United States should ever lose to anyone. That's the downside to it, is the NBA, they're trying to get more international, so they have this world team, because there are a great number of international players. I mean, if you look at the international roster, which we will do in a bit, there are a number of legit players on here. Andrew Wiggins is on this roster, and, you know, Mirotić is on this roster, for example. Guys who have come into the NBA and made impacts, and obviously we know...
I don't think Mirotić is going to play.
Well, right, but I'm saying he's on the roster, mm-hmm. though. But either way, like, we talk about... You know, and these are the young foreign players. We're not even talking about the trailblazers like Dirk and the Gasol brothers and other guys like that who kind of paved for the way for them to get here. And so I see what the NBA is doing here. But if you're looking for the best overall matchup, I think it probably should go back to the rookies and the sophomores in the way it was, because that way, you know, everybody will be a part of it. I mean, the USA team, I know you're going to be mad about Booker not being on the team, and... Yeah, there are good players on the USA team who are better than some of these world players who got left out. I mean, that's just a fact.
I mean, so let's look at the roster. Bogdanović with the Nets, Clint Capella, Herzonia, Jokic, Mirotić, Moutier, Rao Naidoo, Porzingis, obviously, Dwight Powell, and Andrew Wiggins. If you look at the Rising Star Challenge over in the U.S., and I take a little bit of exception with a couple of these names, but Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, who's been great, Zach LaVine, Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, Jabari Parker, Elfrid Payton, Russell, Marcus Smart, Karl Anthony Towns. For the most part, you know, I would have left Russell off myself. I probably would have left LaVine off myself as well. But then you look at the USA players who didn't get in. Yeah, Booker, who, and like you said, yes, it does bother me. Not the end of the world, though. Whatever.
I mean, but, it's all, the kid's 18, so I'd rather have a long career at the end of the game.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's an all-star game. Iggy got robbed in the dunk contest, 2-0-6, but I've moved on.
I mean, you know, Booker, who's been averaging 17 points in January, who is his per 36 numbers have just been fantastic. Julius Randle with the Lakers, who didn't get in, that, you know, he's averaging 11 points and 10 rebounds. Winslow, Miles Turner, who has been fantastic. You know, for the Pacers, his per 36 numbers are he's 19 points and 9 rebounds. I think right now he's doing 9 points and 4, but he's making a huge impact. And you look at Rao Naidoo, who's averaging 5.7 points a game, Herzonia, 4.5 points, Bogdanović, who's 9 points. He definitely hasn't been lighting the league on fire. And, you know, I understand what they're doing, and I understand your point of it, but I just think it's a shame when you're leaving off much more deserving players just to bring in international players into the game. If those international players, if they deserve to be there, they should be there. I don't feel like...
I see both sides of the coin. I don't really like... I like the USA versus the world aspect, especially, like I said, as basketball goes more international. I think that this game won't be quite as lopsided in the future, but I'm also like, I always want to see the best matchup, and there are definitely quality players that you name there who won't make this team. LaVine would probably be my first off, even over D'Angelo Russell. I'm not convinced Zach LaVine is very good. I don't really know what Zach LaVine is, other than one of the better dunkers in the league at this point. And let it be known, he is probably the best dunker in the league.
He's like a young Gerald Green who can't shoot.
Yeah, he just, like, what does Zach LaVine do well? other than dunk. Exactly. Like, I'm really struggling. Like, he's not a great shooter. He kind of turns the ball over a lot. I'm not really that sold on Zach LaVine. Like, even as a part of the Wolves core going forward, like, he's a nice young player who can still develop. Like, I'm not ready to write him off. I'm just not really that high on Zach LaVine compared to some of these guys either.
Do you think that that the Wolves should have gotten three players in? And that was part of my problem with it, too, is I was just thinking, like, I don't think that the Wolves deserved three players in.
Well, my argument stands is I think LaVine would probably be my first thought. I think Wiggins and Towns, you got to put in the game. Towns is clearly the best rookie this year, and Wiggins won the Rookie of the Year last year.
LaVine's assist to turnover rate really isn't bad. He's averaging 3.1 assists to 1.9 turnovers. He did cut that down from last year, where it was 3.6 assists to 2.5 turnovers. Probably has something to do with him not playing point guard so much this year.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, the assist to turnover ratio really isn't terrible with LaVine.
But you're listening to the Drive Edition NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive Edition NBA.
So let us do some hot takes from Reddit.
Hot take number one.
Gordon Hayward is not a star player, and should the Celtics trade for him?
Well, of course the Celtics should try to trade for him. I think the Celtics, if you can get... I mean, Gordon Hayward is definitely a really solid NBA player. I think he could be a guy that maybe takes the Celtics to the next step, because we always talk about the Celtics and that they have a collection of really nice players, but what's the next step for the Celtics? And maybe Hayward is a guy that can get them to the next level. So, of course, that part makes sense. I mean, I guess Jazz fans, from what I've heard, they're not quite as thrilled with Gordon Hayward. I guess they kind of expected him to take a leap this year, and he really hasn't. You know, his points per game are about the same, 19.3 last year, 19.8 this year. His assist numbers are slightly down. Everything else is, you know, pretty much about the same. His effective field goal percentage is the same.
So, I mean, he stagnated, but that doesn't mean he regressed.
Yeah, and the Jazz paid him a lot of money, and I think that's the thing, is they want him to kind of take that superstar leap. Like, am I convinced Gordon Hayward is a superstar at this point? No, I'm not convinced that, I guess, is what's according to the hot take. But he's still a really, really, really good player that anybody should want on their team, and who I think is, you know, been a big part of the Jazz's success.
Without Gordon Hayward, the Jazz are quite literally a bottom feeder.
I'd argue Gobert is the most important player to that team in terms of what he does for them, and in terms of how much he, you know, makes their defensive identity and how much they play off that. I mean, that's
Jazz don't have a point guard.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And Gordon Hayward's your main ball handler. Like, no matter how good Gobert is defensively, without Hayward, they don't have anyone to handle the ball.
Well, sure, and that's been the frustrating thing with the Jazz. The Jazz realistically have put... I mean, they drafted Trey Burke. They drafted Dante Exum, and Exum got hurt. You can't really fault him for that. But, you know, they put a lot of draft picks into their point guard position, and there's still a lot of uncertainty there. And that seems to be what's holding them back.
Hot take number two.
Rondo will be a great coach.
Oh, God, no. Why in the world would anyone think...
I don't know, man. I've seen some plays of Rondo coaching on court, like telling DeMarcus Cousins where to guard and a few other things. And maybe he wouldn't be, but dude is smart.
Sure.
The All-Star snubs, one in there that I should have brought up was Rajon Rondo.
Rondo's balling out this year. Like, I don't doubt that. His assist numbers are just ridiculous night in and night out. And when Rajon Rondo wants to be, he is a great floor general. Let's not forget that last year he quit on Dallas. When you're a head coach, it's a lot more than calling plays on the floor. I mean, a lot of times head coaches aren't calling plays on the floor. They leave that up to their point guard. I mean, basically from everything I've heard, Rondo's an asshole. And I don't really think an asshole can be a successful head coach in the league. A little bit, sure, but there's got to be a balance. I don't know, man. Just that whole Dallas situation still kind of rubs me the wrong way. And he's playing great this year. And Sacramento is in the playoff hunt, a big part of the way he's playing. And he's going to get a ton of money this offseason. Rajon Rondo is extremely talented. But head coach, all right, let's take it down a bit here. It's a little too spicy of a take.
All right.
Hot take number three.
David Black got screwed, so he should get into the All-Star game and be the coach anyway.
I kind of like it.
I kind of like it, too.
I kind of like the sentiment. I'm not going to lie. I mean, David Black, I mean, how many games has Tyronn Lue coached? We didn't bring this up earlier, but there's a really funny graphic on Bleacher Report that I saw this week, and it had Popovich next to Lue.
Yes.
And it had Popovich had all sorts of pins all over him. He had all his trophies, Coach of the Year, all that stuff. And the only pin on Tyronn Lue was a pin of Allen Iverson stepping over him. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, God. He will never, ever, ever escape
that. It's Tyronn Lue, isn't it?
It's Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue.
I think it's Tyronn Lue. It's Tyronn. Not Tyronn. It's Tyronn. That's according to Zach Lowe, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, so, people pronounce it different ways. But anyway.
Roberson.
I mean, I kind of like it. It's never going to happen in a billion years, but I would watch surely for just the sheer awkwardness of it. And if I were David Blatt and they let me coach the All-Star game and I got fired, I would come in there and I would coach the hell out of that All-Star game. I would be drawing up plays. I'd be calling timeouts. I'd be taking it as like an actual serious game, not where, oh, there's 5 minutes left. We should probably start trying because we want to win this game and not lose it. I mean, that's just what I would do personally.
I think I'm going to boycott. I think I'm going to go back to the boycott.
Why are you going back to the boycott?
Because I would find it more beneficial.
Kyrie Irving didn't even make the All-Star team.
I would find it more beneficial for myself as well as the podcast if I simply caught up on basketball.
But, dude, come on. You're not going to watch the All-Star game? You're not going to watch the dunk contest? You're not going to watch the skills contest?
Putting my foot down.
The skills contest is low-key better than the dunk contest.
Yeah, well, they put some big men in the skills contest.
They did. DeMarcus Cousins is in this year.
Yeah.
First one in a while. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, I mean, the dunk contest, we should have a discussion about this. The dunk contest, like, what realistically can they do at this point that
nothing.
They haven't done already?
There's nothing. There's nothing
and last
you can
year,
do.
And last year was the best dunk contest we've had in a while. I mean, LaVine put on a show last year.
Well, yeah, but you remember the very beginning of that dunk contest, how they tried to do, like, the team thing? And it was just kind of awkward and wasn't good.
And 2 years ago, yeah, they did
was that,
like...
Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was like a dunk-off. It was like, yeah. Oh, you have a minute to do all the dunks you can and the best one wins. It was horrible. It was the worst thing I've ever watched. Like, I was really about
Wait,
done.
You and I were sitting at some dive bar watching it, and it was just like... I think we were talking about doing the show then, and that's what the reason why we're meeting at that dive bar that night. And yeah, it was awful.
It was awful. It was all, and that was. It was right. We started the show when I think it was the first episodes. I don't know if they went up, but it was February 13 is when we like really started this, which makes sense. I mean, that's when the All-Star break is, and yeah, it was the absolute worst. Last year, you know, LaVine was entertaining. I thought Oladipo was pretty entertaining as well. So it kind of restored my faith in it a little bit, but I'm also kind of over it.
Yeah,
like, they just can't do anything. Or get these like YouTube dunkers.
But it's, you know, the dunk contest isn't for us. It's not for people that have been watching basketball for 20 years. It's about the kids growing up watching a dunk contest for the first time.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, you look at how many, I mean, I know for me growing up, like I remember the Vince Carter dunk contest and I remember Jason Richardson in the dunk contest and I remember Iggy in the dunk contest.
Ooh, I remember Derek Williams in the dunk contest.
Oh boy. I said that Gerald Green was in the dunk contest too. Remember he blew the he had the candle on the cupcake. He did.
That's the only player I want to see in the dunk contest this year.
That's an underrated dunk contest with Gerald Green and Dwight Howard and Nate Robinson, and like that's a really slept on, quietly great dunk contest. Also, Iggy still. And yeah, I'm sounding bitter. Iggy got robbed so badly in 06. It is mind-blowing that he lost that dunk contest to Nate Robinson. Whoa, Nate Robinson barely jumped over someone. Iggy jumped from under the fucking backboard and threw down reverse style. Like, Nate Robinson's short. He can dunk. Congratulations. Like, that's awesome. But that was so ridiculous. There was one... Nate Robinson won 3 dunk contests, and there's maybe 1 year where I thought he should have won it.
I'm sorry for your loss, Kevin.
Well, it's just in general. Like, just because you're short and you can dunk doesn't make it more impressive than these guys who are doing these ridiculous acrobatic throwdowns.
It does make it impressive, though.
Sure it does. I'm not taking away from the impressiveness of it, but it's not as impressive. Like, it's just kind of a cop-out. It's like, oh, look, he's 6 foot, he can dunk. Like, whoopty shit.
I mean, I would be impressed if either one of us could dunk.
Yeah, but we're realistic with ourselves. We know that's not going to happen.
So you want to do a random player?
You know what they say. The more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Want to know a little secret about education? It'll improve your sex life.
It's random NBA player highlights on the Drive and Dish podcast.
Okay, today we're going to talk about Luke Theodore Walden. Currently, he is the assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors, but let's take it back a second and talk about when he actually played. Walton played college ball at the University of Arizona under coach Lou Olson. His best year statistically was when he was a junior. He averaged 15.7 points, 7.3 rebounds, 6.3 assists, 1.6 steals, and about a half a block per game. During his senior year, though, he averaged 10.8 points, 5.6 rebounds, 5.1 assists, and almost a whole block per game. He graduated from Arizona in the spring of 2003 after completing work in family studies and human development. He was 6'8 and he weighed about 235 pounds. He was selected by the Los Angeles Lakers in 2003 with the second pick of the second round, so that was 32nd overall. In 2006-2007, he had his best year in the NBA. He scored a career-high 25 points against the Hawks on December 8, 2006. For the season that year, he posted career highs in averages in minutes, field goal percentage, steals, blocks, rebounds, assists, and points. His player efficiency rating also reached a career high. After that season, he was signed by the Lakers to a six-year, $30 million contract where he won two NBA championships. His first coaching experience was with the University of Memphis, which hired Walton as an assistant coach during the 2011 NBA lockout. His employment there lasted the whole time of the lockout. Once he retired, Walton was then hired as a player development coach by the LA Defenders of the D-League. He was there for the 2013-2014 season. Following that year, Walton became an assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors, where he said, "We're going to run parts of the triangle offense," because he knows that thing front and back from when he was with the Lakers. Walton joined the Warriors staff on July 3rd, 2014, and the Warriors won the 2015 NBA Finals, as you know, defeating the Cleveland Cavaliers in six games to give Walton his third NBA championship and, of course, his first as a coach. In October of 2015, Walton was appointed as the Warriors' intern head coach when Steve Kerr took indefinite leave to rehabilitate his back that had been bothering him. Walton made his coaching debut in the season opener on October 27th, and they had a 111-95 win over the Pelicans. Three games later, they won over the Memphis Grizzlies 119-69, the largest margin of victory since 1991. And for those of you listening, that's the year I was born. Some fun facts about Walton. He has a tattoo on his right arm of four Grateful Dead-type dancing skeletons, each one with a basketball. The skeletons represent Luke and his three brothers. His brothers named Adam, Nathan, and Chris. And his brother Nathan actually ran unsuccessfully for governor during the 2003 California recall. If you don't know what that is, you should totally look it up. And last fun fact about him is he was named after his dad, Bill Walton's former teammate when he was on the Portland Trailblazers, Maurice Lucas. And that is your random NBA player of the week, Luke Walden.
So the trade deadline is coming up, and it has been kind of a quiet lead up to the trade deadline. But look at last year, and all hell broke loose last year right before the trade deadline.
So, yeah, when even Woj tweeted last year, "Good Lord, this is nuts," or I don't remember the exact wording, but it was just like, "My God," or something like that. When Woj is overwhelmed, you know it's a crazy trade deadline.
He has a lot of Twitter followers.
Yeah, I mean, he breaks every basketball news, it seems like, so...
So there are going to be, right now anyway, there are players that are in the rumor mill, and we're going to do a little game because...
I like games.
And it would be blank if they traded him by the trade deadline. Kevin answering this, of course.
Okay.
Biggest name on the list by far, Blake Griffin. It would be blank if they traded him by the trade deadline.
Shocking. You know, we didn't really talk about this because it broke earlier in the league, but Blake Griffin's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks because he punched his equipment manager, apparently, which is definitely something. I don't know what it is with NBA players and punching things. You think you'd learn.
Doc Rivers said he felt like Bill Clinton answering questions about how much alcohol had been had by his players that night.
Well, it's just like, NBA players, stop punching things. Like, Amari Stoudemire punched a fire extinguisher a few years ago in the playoffs against the Celtics and then didn't play the rest of the series.
You
need your hands.
I wouldn't find it shocking. Doc Rivers said that if they didn't make it past the second round this year, that there would be serious consideration about breaking up the big three.
Sure.
I don't think Blake Griffin should be the one traded. But that being said, the Clippers have won 9 in a row. They might be able to get something back for it. You find it shocking. Let me throw out these trades. Blake Griffin for Chris Bosh.
Just straight up?
Yep.
I'd consider it. Mm-hmm. But it would be really surprising to see someone. I mean, Blake Griffin is still really young.
So what do you take, though?
Would I take Chris Bosh for Blake Griffin?
If you're the Clips.
If you really don't think you can get over the hump and are convinced internally that you can win this year, and you think Chris Bosch is going to be that guy who can kind of stretch the floor and give you that extra shooting and take you over the top and not clog the paint as much with DeAndre Jordan, then sure, I think I would consider it. But I'm really, really hesitant to trade Blake Griffin and then have to watch 10 years of Blake Griffin being awesome in another city. Okay. Like that's one of those potential franchise-altering, regime-altering trades.
Blake Griffin straight up for Melo.
Oh, I wouldn't do Blake Griffin for Melo at this point.
No?
I still think Melo is just like, dude, I worry Melo about Melo's efficiency.
Melo, low-key, to use your term, Kevin, this year has been playing the exact type of basketball that everybody has been calling for him to play.
Yeah.
And it's flying under the radar because his numbers have gone down. But well, that's because he's moving the ball. He's playing off the ball. He's getting his teammates involved. Like, Melo has been good.
I think Melo's realistic with all the injuries last year and just with him getting older too about the player that he is. I mean, Melo, if he wants to be in the game, and you know Melo
well,
wants
it's not
a ring.
It's not a winning style of ball. Like, well, right. Isolation isn't a winning style of ball.
And you know Melo wants a ring. I mean, when you look at that draft class and you look at the players in the league without a ring, I mean, who really stands out besides Melo where you begin to wonder, are they ever going to win a ring? The only one that I can think of is Chris Paul. And in the case of Melo, I mean, the Knicks, I mean, I think it's going under the radar a little bit, too, because, I mean, the Knicks are good, but they're not great. And I also think, for better or for worse, the hype around the Knicks right now is Porzingis. Porzingis is the talk of New York. Melo kind of is an afterthought, which is you never thought you'd say. But yeah, Porzingis has the attention right now in New York City.
He has the attention, but Melo has been fantastic this year. And yeah. I just, like, I know how NBA fans are, and I know how they get, you know, it's riding waves and streaks and trending players and trending topics, and Melo has been great this year. All right, next one. Griffin for Al Horford and Kyle Korver. And anybody listening can't see, Kevin just smiled a little bit.
Oh man, I worry about Korver being a little repetitive with JJ Redick, and who, by the way, is
JJ Redick. Oh my god,
having
he's
a career
been so
year
good this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, JJ Redick's been phenomenal this
I mean that
year.
That backcourt, you look at the Clippers and it's like, you know, that backcourt with Chris Paul, who's been really good this year as well, and JJ Redick, like, their backcourt is popping right now.
Well,
if you don't win this year with your backcourt playing this well, you might not win another year.
Oh, it's do or die for the Clippers this year. I don't think, if the Clippers don't win this year, I don't think they're ever going to win as their core is currently constructed, because for better or for worse, Chris Paul's only getting older. I'd consider it. I still worry a little bit about Horford's durability, and I kind of think Horford can play more of the four, but he kind of gets in the way of DeAndre Jordan. He's not really going to stretch the floor too much for you. So I'm probably going to say no. It's intriguing, but I'm probably going to say no.
Okay, Blake Griffin, last one for Kevin Love.
Yeah, I'd probably trade him straight up for Kevin Love. It's a hit on the defensive end. I mean, Love can shoot. We know that. Blake mm-hmm. Griffin, just you don't have to really worry about Blake Griffin hitting three pointers unless he's playing your sons and hitting buzzer beaters, of course. I remember watching that, and it was like one of those 3 a.m. early mornings at work. And I remember watching that highlight, and I was like, Tim is going to walk in, because you guys were still in the middle of a playoff race then. I was like, Tim is going to walk in, and he's going to be so pissed when he sees this shot.
Now I'm just pissed when the Suns win. All right, so let's move on. Jeff Teague, his name's been rumored a lot lately. It would be blank if the Hawks traded him by the trade deadline.
It would be pro Schroeder. I mean, basically,
they've been chopping Schroeder too.
Sure, but I mean, basically, the conversation that we've been having is, you know, I like Teague and I like Schroeder a lot. They're both kind of the same player, and they both kind of step on each other's minutes a little bit. So you wonder, at the end of the day,
Schroeder is in no way the distributor that Teague is.
No, I like Teague more, but Teague's a little bit older. You know, Schroeder's still younger, so you maybe take the bet on the youth there. I think that if you're trading Teague, it's a sign that you don't want to, A, pump the money into him long term, and that, B, you think Schroeder can be your point guard of the future, and so you want to sell high on Jeff Teague while you still can get something. And so, I mean, that's what it would be to me. I think Teague is a really nice point guard who has a ton of value, and I think if he gets traded at the trade deadline, you know, I like what they can get back for him.
I've heard a lot of people out there saying that the Hawks are talking about hitting a reset button if you just sign Paul Millsap like they did, that you don't hit the reset button. You don't. So I don't like the move, but teams rumored, and this is what I find more intriguing, the Jazz, the Knicks, and the Magic.
Jazz need a point guard. He'd be such a good fit for the Jazz.
If I were the Jazz, I would be going all in on trying to get Jeff Teague.
Oh yeah, and they have things that you can give up. I mean, you can center a package around Dante Exum maybe, and a few
I was
going to
ask
players.
You that. So would you trade Dante Exum for Jeff Teague if you had the Jazz?
Absolutely. You know what Jeff Teague is, and I think Jeff Teague is young enough that he fits the core of that team, and I think Jeff Teague can help them take the next step. I like Exum a lot still, but at the end of the day, we still don't really know what Dante Exum is. He showed a little bit of flashes last year, but his minutes were limited a lot. And then he got hurt, so we didn't really get to see him we didn't get to see him in the Worlds at all this year. And in this case, when all you need really if you're the Jazz is a point guard, I think you go out and get a point guard.
Next up, Tyreek Evans, who he is making $10.2 million. The Pelicans would be blank if they traded him by the trade deadline.
Cap conscious is what I'm going to go with. And that's only because, and that's not to say that the Pelicans are really up against the cap or anything, but just a lot of the arguments that we've had with the Pelicans is, and kind of just their offseason is, you have Tyreek Evans, you have Eric Gordon, you have Drew Holiday, and you've invested all these money into these players. And it just kind of, there's overlap there. And so at some point you got to move on from somebody. And I think Tyreek Evans, well, he's been injured like crazy this year, which has been the problem, is he hasn't been able to stay healthy, and that's been kind of his issue overall. It's been the problem with all the Pelicans guards. I mean, Eric Gordon hasn't been able to stay healthy really his entire career, and I think you can just anticipate that at this point. Drew Holiday is coming off a major injury and is still kind of getting used to it again. He's missed a lot of time over the last 2 years. If you're looking to move one of them, Tyreek Evans is probably the guy. And the added benefit, if you're the Pelicans, is too, is you're probably going to lose some more games and be in the contest, I should say, for the the number one, number two pick. I mean, imagine if you could put Ben Simmons next to Anthony Davis. I think you got to look at the long term here. And I think Tyreek Evans has value. I mean, he's played well when he's healthy. It's just a matter of getting him healthy. But it is a matter of repetitiveness for the Pelicans. That's been one of our concerns with them over the past few years.
Yeah, I think that if they do look to move him, that the Hornets could benefit from him. The Hornets are 28th as far as isolation points. They're field goal percentage on isolations right above 30%. I think they could really use him. Washington, I think, could really use a second ball handler coming off the bench behind John Wall, because they don't have one. And Washington is in a...
Washington's a mess. They had a players-only meeting last night. It is bad in Washington.
Well, Washington, they're trying to get Kevin Durant, and they aren't going to get Kevin Durant if they don't prove that they can win.
No. And you kind of like the last two seasons, we wanted Washington to take the leap, and they've seemed to have turned it on in the playoffs. But I'm not enthralled. They have to make the playoffs too this year. And right now, the Eastern Conference is better. You're not going to be able to skate in this year and then maybe kind of turn it on late.
I'm glad you mentioned how the Eastern Conference is better, because at the very beginning of the season, everyone was all hyped on the Eastern Conference. And, as of right now, the eighth seed is 24-22, which is good, but it's not light years better than it was last year. The East has slowed down a little bit. They haven't been as good since Christmas.
No, but they're still, Toronto's playing quality ball right now. Miami,
Toronto, we haven't talked about Toronto yet.
No,
there
are people on our podcast listeners think we don't ever talk about Toronto. We get hit up about that a lot.
we will spend some time talking about Toronto. So let's move on. Markieff Morris. The Suns would be blank if they traded him by the trade deadline.
God, relieved. That's the word, relieved. This has been such a saga. It's been such a mess. I think that it's clear that there needs to be a mutual separation here, if you will. I mean, honestly, if I'm the Suns, you just gotta get rid of Keefe. At this point, I know you want to get your value, but unfortunately, just the way he kind of hamstrung the franchise, for better or for worse. And I think he's hurt his own value a little bit too. I don't think that's been the biggest thing. I don't think teams are going to give up a lot for Keefe, and that's going to be the decision that Ryan McDonough and the Suns organization need to make. I mean, it's clear that Keefe's got to go. He needs to get out of Phoenix. Phoenix needs to move on. They need to, you've said this a billion times, this is a season from hell if you're Phoenix. Pretty much everything that could have possibly gone wrong has found a way to go wrong this year. I would just, you guys need to trade Keefe. You guys have some, viable young assets. You guys are going to have a high draft pick this year. So I
felt like you last night, Kevin. I was watching the Suns play the Knicks. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I was watching the game, because I've been taking off some Suns games intentionally.
You have to.
Yeah, you have to. In order for me to still love basketball, I can't watch all the Suns games anymore. The Suns just signed McRae.
Jordan McRae.
Yes, Jordan McRae from...
61 points, D-League record.
D-League record, and I was watching the game to see him play, and he was fantastic. But I felt like you, where you're when you were watching the Sixers, you're looking at these D-League players to see what you can get out of them. And he was really good. As far as Keefe is concerned, though, I agree that Keefe needs to go. Here's the thing about moving into this offseason is that every single team is going to have cap space. So more than any other year, cap space doesn't matter as much as it did before. With the Suns not being a very good team, their likelihood of being able to attract a really quality free agent is pretty slim to none. So what is the unloading Keefe just for cap space doesn't seem like that's
going to
be beneficial.
It's not a cap space concern of mine at all. The Suns are right there with Boston and the Sixers in terms of having the most flexibility.
Right. So if you aren't going to unload him for cap space, and his value has never been lower, if you're the Suns, you can look at it this way. And if you aren't getting trade offers that you like, which they probably aren't, that you wait it out because his value's never been lower. It can't go much lower. No. So what's the point? You're going to get a new coach, and if you don't get any trade offers, you might as well try and salvage the relationship, and maybe a new coach can do that. So either his trade value is going to go up, or a new coach can salvage the situation.
Yeah, it's
true. Like at this point, I just don't see a point of trading Markieff if you aren't going to get anything back for him.
I think if you think he's a genuine locker room problem, and that's with the team in general, like that's with your guys going forward, if you think he's a negative influence on Booker and on, you know, maybe Archie Goodwin if he keeps getting some burn and some of these other young guys, you know, Alex Len and all that, then I think there may be a point to trade him because I think it's one of those intangible things. But I understand your point. I think if Hornacek doesn't come back and he's still under contract, you know, Markieff at the end of the day has to play for them for better or for worse. So
yeah, and you might as well see if he can get the trade value up a little bit. You know, maybe next year when Ryan Anderson's on the market for $20 million a year and teams are saying, well, we could pay Markieff $8 million or we could pay Ryan Anderson $20 million, Markieff's value might look a little bit more enticing for him. Let's go to, I guess, the big name on the list, Kevin Love. It would be blank if Cleveland traded him by the trade deadline.
It would be short-sighted. I still don't think Kevin Love has been utilized the right way.
Not remotely.
I think that Lou hasn't had enough of a chance to coach with him to really see that the fit isn't there. I still think Kevin Love is a tremendously talented player that you don't come across very often. The last thing Cleveland needs is another big-time shakeup. You know, I don't want to raise the panic alarm, but it kind of seems like this team is teetering on the edge as it is. I mean, LeBron James is clearly pissed off whenever he plays anymore. You know, he was openly yelling at Tristan Thompson last night against the Pistons when they had a 14-point lead. They put all this money into this team. You know, you got the Cavaliers were two games away from winning the finals last year. It is not time to blow the horn and trade Kevin Love. If you take a big time L in the playoffs this year and you don't make it to the finals and you just get absolutely punked in the finals, maybe, which is a possibility.
What about Kevin Love straight up for DeMarcus Cousins?
No, I don't.
You wouldn't do that?
No, I don't think I'd do that. I would consider it. But I'm not ready to make a drastic shakeup with this Cleveland team yet. Even with some of the issues that they're dealing with, this team is still could waltz to the finals, which means they're going to have a chance. And if they have a chance, you know, it's a 7-game series. If LeBron James turns into LeBron James like he did last year, where he was playing that great, and Kevin Love starts clicking and Kyrie Irving starts clicking, they could win it all this year. I'm not a fan of totally changing your season at this point the way I would be. I think if you're going to trade Kevin Love, it needs to happen in the offseason. I don't think it needs to happen now.
So let's do mailbag.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everyone.
Oh, boy.
All right, so the first question, we hit this a little bit earlier, kind of, but this one's a little more specific. It comes from Charlie Burns. He asks, Jeff Teague to the Knicks, thought on fits and probability?
I mean, I think the fit's great. It depends on the package that they gotta send for him. I mean, the confusing thing about the Knicks is, you know, obviously you have Porzingis, who's really young. You have Melo, who's past his prime. So is sticking a 28-year-old Jeff Teague in there really what you want to do?
Yeah, I'm of the belief that the Knicks kind of, you know, I love Melo and I think Melo can be effective for a long time, but I think the Knicks need to, you know, build around Porzingis, draft young talent, kind of take that route going forward. And so I do wonder if Teague's timeline is there, because this Knicks team is playing good ball this year, but they still have a long way to go.
Does adding Teague help attract free agents? You know, that's another way to look at it too. Yeah, but you have a Calderon's great, but what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but I think players are more aware than anything about who realistic is going to win next year. I mean, look at Greg Monroe. Greg Monroe turned down New York to go to Milwaukee.
Yeah, like, but that New York team last year was...
True, but, you know...
I think
players would go more to Porzingis than they would to...
Well, you're looking at that. You're looking at Robin Lopez. You're looking at Aaron Aflalo. Like, there's something to be said if they get Jeff Teague that they could attract better free agents.
I used to be jealous of Aaron Aflalo.
What about?
Next question comes from...
Was that a rap song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The next question comes from Pablo Newton Farley. He asked, with the Clippers, should they look to the future and trade either CP3 or Blake? Also, what excuse would you have given for breaking your hand?
I mean, it's tricky. I don't think that you trade Chris Paul. I just don't.
No, I don't think you trade Chris Paul either. And I don't think you trade Blake unless you really get blown away.
Like,
by
I think
package.
That if you trade somebody, you trade Jordan, but I don't think that anybody's buying bigs.
Oh, I think people would. DeAndre Jordan's an athletic big, though. Like, you worry about his free throw percentage, but what he adds to a team defensively. Like, I think, and DeAndre Jordan's still relatively young. Like, I think you can get a ton of value for DeAndre Jordan. And I think DeAndre Jordan has really elevated his game in the absence of Blake Griffin. So I think he's only increasing their value there. I'm not ready to punt yet on the Clippers. I think the Clippers need to. This is the year for the Clippers. It's make or break for me. They don't get what they're looking for this year. I think you got to seriously consider big time changes. But I'm not ready to do it yet. As for the excuse for breaking my hand, I'd say something ridiculous. Like, not just extreme and common. I'd say, like, I broke my hand opening a jar of cheese or something.
I'd pull Kevin Love and say I broke it doing push-ups.
I forgot about that. How do you break your hand? Oh boy, never mind. We're not going to get into this. All right, so the next question comes from our friends over at Crazy Stats. Shout out to Crazy Stats. Make sure you check their page out as well.
It's a really good page.
Yeah, like, no, it really
no
is.
No joke, they always have these random Crazy Stats given the name on their Facebook page. Good stuff.
But first team to make a move.
I got to say, I think it's New Orleans. They have two expiring deals. They need to trade some of their players if they aren't going to be making it into the playoffs, because they want to improve their draft stock as much as possible. Between Ryan Anderson and Gordon, and we talked about Tyreke Evans earlier, I think that they're up there for being a team that is looking to make some moves. You also got to look at Boston, who has been, you know, they have too many draft picks. They have too many players playing the same position. They have Amir Johnson, who his next year is not guaranteed. So you have that contract. You have the David Lee contract for teams looking to shed some salary. I think you could look at Boston to make a move as well.
Not to go back to Jeff Teague, but it seems like the Hawks are really actively shopping Teague right now and making a play. So I don't know why, but I have a weird feeling that we could see that done sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this during the offseason, that this was going to happen. The Hawks were going to have to choose between the two. I think, yeah, as long as the Hawks don't blow it up, like, you don't sign Paul Millsap and then blow up your
team.
Well,
that's the thing, right? And that's what, you know, kind of going back to earlier, it's like you brought a lot of these guys back, and especially Paul Millsap. Like, Paul Millsap had a very competitive offer from Orlando. Like, if you don't think this team is going to win it all and you need to blow it up, you shouldn't wait till now to blow it up.
They could use some bench help too. I mean, you know, Mike Muscala being the first big off the bench, you can't really win with that.
All right, so next question comes from Byron Hutchinson. He asks, thoughts on 27-year-old rookie Boban Marjanovic. He had arguably his two best performances against the Sixers, 18 points, and the Suns, 17 points, 13 rebounds in less than 15 minutes. So I'm assuming both you guys have had a look into him. His PIE is at a 20 currently. Where do you see him this time next year? Another NBA team, boosted contract, or still a spark off the bench in San Antonio?
Honestly, like, the guy's intriguing. I think he's the 11th tallest player in NBA history. But, you know, he's a big that can't really move. I don't really ever see him playing meaningful minutes. You know, in a playoff series, he might come in handy depending on the matchup and the foul trouble that people are in. But I honestly think he's more of a gimmick. You know, he's fun to watch. But as far as, like, an actual NBA talent, you know, he's a garbage dime player to me.
Yeah, he'll be on the Spurs next year, I think. I don't know if we'll get a boosted contract or anything. Again, I want to see him play some more significant minutes, but I think he absolutely can contribute off the bench. I think he's a classic San Antonio guy, so I would expect to see him in San Antonio next year. I don't think he'll be on another team unless somebody really, really just overpays for him, which, you know, is an extreme possibility.
I mean, if you're looking at, there's a lot of bigs on the market right now. Roy Hibbert, who we didn't really talk about, Birdman, Anderson, you know, there's some bigs that are available on the market right now. Tyson Chandler, if anybody really wanted that contract, they could go get it.
Yeah.
I just think that there's better Hassan Whiteside, who we didn't really talk about that much. There are going to be bigs on the market. And one underrated thing with Whiteside is that Miami doesn't have his bird rights.
Yeah.
Dude can go anywhere he wants.
Absolutely.
Miami can't offer anything better, nor do they have the room to do it.
I wouldn't be shocked if Miami moves him at all. We might as well.
I just don't know what they get
side
for him, because they can't really take on money because they're over the cap. You know, so they might have a small trade exception, but you know, at best, you're looking at like a $3 or $4 million player that you're getting in return.
Yeah, no, it's Miami's going to have some tough choices to make. So the next question comes from Trent Arnold. He asks, love to hear your opinions on Boogie Cousins' ranking in the league right now. He's in great form, probably a top 10 guy, but just how high? I personally have him over Anthony Davis, which I think is another interesting debate.
Dude, Cousins is arguably the best center in the league. Just what he does for a team, the fact that Sacramento is two games out of the playoffs right now, and hats off to Rondo. I also, speaking of Rondo, we have been lightly discussing most improved player, and if the Kings are in the playoffs when we go about our voting for that, I'm going to put Rondo as my most improved player.
He's got a strong argument for it. I don't know if I... Again, I don't think quitting and then suddenly deciding to try to play again is necessarily improving, but... You know, we can have that argument down the road, but I think there's definitely a case for it.
Cousins, though, I put top three center, probably number one in the league.
So where do you put him in the overall top 10 then?
You know, I don't know. I don't have a list in front of me. He is hands down a top 15 player. And, you know, if I gave it some more thought, I could probably put him in the top 10.
He's not my five, but, and I don't have a broken down list, but I'll say top 10, especially the way he's playing this season. If we're talking about right now, I think he's definitely top 10. Is he better than Anthony Davis this year? Probably. Is he better all time than Anthony? I mean, I still like Anthony Davis's projections to just, and I'm still on that bandwagon. I just think Anthony Davis projects to be so special, and so I'm not ready to jump off that bandwagon, but Boogie's a stud. Boogie this year is probably playing better than AD is.
I'll tell you what, though. You are not wanting a fourth-year player to stagnate or regress like Davis did.
He's just been so hit or miss this year.
Yeah, no,
he's had nights where he looks like
regressed,
he's the most
though.
Dominant player in the league, but then he has nights where it's about finding that consistency, and that's going to be, you know, Anthony Davis got paid. It's going to be the next, you know, these guys get paid, and it's always the next big step is, can you keep it up? So our final question comes from Hector on Twitter, at Hector J. Garza. There's an underscore before the Hector. He says, let's say Byron Scott doesn't come back next year. Who should the Lakers hire to replace him?
David Blatt, man.
Oh, dude, David Blatt, that's your answer?
Yeah.
Tim, there's one clear answer here.
Jeff Hornacek?
No, it's Luke Walton, dude. Come on, Luke Walton played with the Lakers.
He's signing with the Suns.
He won, too.
The Suns are already in talks with him.
Dude, it's the Lakers gig, though. He played in Los Angeles. He won two rings in Los Angeles. It's, you live in LA. I mean, no offense to Phoenix, but like, it's LA. It's one of the historic, dude. Oh, Luke Walton. It's got to be Luke Walton.
Jeff Hornacek.
Thank you, everyone, for hitting us up with your mailbag questions this week. As always, hit us up on Twitter at DriveAndDishNBA. You can always hit us up on our Facebook page, too. Make sure you give us a like at DriveAndDishNBA Podcast. Ask us your mailbag questions. We'll answer the best ones on the show this week, or next week, I should say.
And if you haven't had a chance yet, make sure you leave us a review on iTunes. It really does help. Also, shout out to everyone that voted for us as the podcast of the month or podcast of the week. As soon as we get an update on that, we will let you know. But seriously, thank you so much for the support, whether that was voting or retweeting or whatever it was. We really appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Guys.
Make sure you check out our website at drivingdishpodcast.com. If you're so inclined, you can follow us individually on Twitter. Myself, Kevin, I'm at Refuse to Lose. Tim is at Radio Tim NBA. Our producer, Justin Kuzart, who's been off freedom fighting in Flint, is at Justin C on the air. But he will be returning next week. All three of us are going to be back in the studio. We got a lot of exciting stuff. You know, we got a big announcement that we can't wait to tell you guys about. And we also, believe it or not, NBA season is almost halfway over, so our midseason review is going to be coming up. So make sure you stay tuned for that.
Super excited about the midseason review. Actually, been trying to want to do it for the last couple of weeks, but there's just been so much going on, we haven't had a chance.
Well, we just want Justin here. It's one of those things where you and I have held it down. You know, I've enjoyed these last two episodes. You know, going back and forth with you, but you know, we got to get Justin in the mix. Got to only be fair.
Yeah, it's better with Justin.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Good
No!
Hey! Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.